The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
All right. Welcome to a Thursday. One day closer to the weekend, so that's a good thing. We got a lot to talk about today because stuff happened yesterday, continues happening. But, you know, it's a whole different attitude. Wasn't that a song back in the 70s? I got a new attitude. You know, it's just so nice not to think every time you turn on the television and check the news that, you know, the crazy man in the Oval Office has done something to put us in danger again. And I don't have that feeling anymore. I don't feel like, you know, I constantly have to check my phone to see what news story broke. And think back, you know, you don't have to think back that far, but it was a constant barrage of nonstop insanity. Seriously, because and it was more shit being thrown at the wall than any person in my situation could cover in a day. I would have to go through and pick and choose, like, what major disaster or possible disaster am I just going to ignore on this specific day, because there's so many other things I have to carry, you know, I have to cover. So, you know, thankfully, we're not there. And so it's a whole different, just a different attitude. But occasionally I still miss things because it's a fast moving, fast paced world. Right. They're still confirming Biden's cabinet picks because we got off to a late start. Hello. Thank you, Trump. But it's happening and things are coming under control. And yesterday, I wasn't even aware this was happening until it had already happened. But Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal and Debbie Dingell together introduced the Medicare for All Medicare for All Act of 2021. This time, though, they're joined by more than half of the Democratic caucus in the House, and that's huge. Because remember, the support for Medicare for All has been a very slow build, and among those who were late to the party is my congressman. Now, I just got word in the last couple of days that Ted Deutch was signing on to Medicare for All. And I got to tell you, I was thrilled. But I was even more thrilled to hear what he said yesterday when he did it. So there was a live stream. You know, last week we had Juliana Furlano on of Act.TV. Well, Act.TV carried, or I guess hosted, this stream. Pramila Jayapal, Debbie Dingell, and the significance of Debbie Dingell, her late husband, John Dingell, who was in the House forever, he would introduce the Medicare for All Act every session of Congress. And he was there for many, 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 many years. And so after he died and Debbie Dingell took his seat, she picked up the mantle. And now, along with the Progressive Caucus and some others who have come to the table, they have introduced the Medicare for All Act of 2021. Now, I'm not going to play for you the entire stream, but I need to play for you the segment with where my congressman spoke. And the reason is, you know, if you've been listening to this program for a while, you heard last year when a very dear friend of the show, of the movement, the biggest progressive activist here in Broward County, Florida, my friend Mitchell Stolberg, died. It wasn't COVID. And it was actually, we've got to be coming up on a year now. So it was a couple of months into COVID, but Mitchell had been battling leukemia. and he and I had a number of conversations about cancer without Medicare for All. Obviously, I fought lung cancer. When he was diagnosed with leukemia, it was even more devastating than it normally would be, because his insurance, he had shitty insurance and had to come up with like a $7,000 deductible before they'd even treat him for the leukemia. So it was a battle. I thought he was doing okay. I thought he was in remission. He didn't talk much about it. And frankly, I didn't talk to him all that often. But then one day I'm online and I see a friend posted something about, you know, Mitch Stolberg, RIP. And so I was devastated. And we talked about it here on the show. So with that said, I want to play for you just the first minute or two of my Congressman Ted Deutch during this Medicare for All live stream yesterday, when Ted Deutch announced that he was now in the Medicare for All camp. And he had a few other words to say. So here's my congressman from Florida's 22nd District, Ted Deutch.
Jay Powell, Representative Dingell, all of my colleagues who are here today, thanks to Public Citizen and Social Security Works and National Nurses United, thanks to Black Lives Matter, and really the whole amazing roster of groups who are leading this effort today. And special thanks as well to add to the advocates all around the country who helped get us to this moment, especially those in South Florida in the 22nd district. And I would be remiss if I didn't take a moment to acknowledge our late dear friend, Mitch Stolberg.
Mitch Stolberg!
Who showed up at every town hall meeting, always sitting in the front row, always with his Medicare for All sign. He, unfortunately, didn't live to see this moment. But we are all thinking about Mitch, and we're also grateful to him and his legacy and advocates all around the country. I'm so proud to join you today, along with over half the Democratic caucus committed to making healthcare a human right in this country. Medicare for All means the end of seniors skipping the pharmacy so they can buy groceries.
Yeah.
It's the end of using the emergency room for basic health care. It's the end of giving up everything that you've worked for in your life to get.
Okay, so I guess that's all I pulled. So my Congressman Ted Deutch, with a tip of the hat to Mitchell Stolberg, who showed up at every town hall meeting, every event with his Medicare for All sign. And it's just, it's extra sad that he didn't live to see his work, hard work, pay off. So how cool was that? How cool was that? I have a call in to my Congressman Ted Deutch to get him back on the show so I can thank him, because, you know, I've bitched. You know me. I complain. I am one who will call out our elected officials if they're not doing the job we hired them to do. And I've been critical of Ted Deutch, and I've known Ted Deutch for years, since he was a state representative. So a long time. And I actually texted him last night and thanked him. And so hopefully he'll come back on the show sometime in the next short while, and I can thank him in person. And I have called him out. I've called him out for not being on Medicare for All. I called him out before he got on board with impeachment the first time. So he's coming around. The more progressive the Biden administration becomes, and surprisingly so, they are, it seems that the more progressive comes my congressman. So that's a good thing. That is a good thing. And as much as, you know, it's important that we criticize because it shows we care, it's also important that we show gratitude when they do the right thing. So I made sure to, you know, I have his cell phone number back from the days when he was in the state legislature and I was doing local, you know, hosting the morning show at the then progressive talk station here in South Florida. So I still have my congressman's cell phone number on my contacts. So I sent him a text last night and thanked him profusely. So that was just one thing that happened yesterday. Something else that happened yesterday, I don't have time to share the whole thing with you. But I am going to share an excerpt with you because it was so good. Now, I knew that now Senator Raphael Warnock had to be a good communicator. He is the minister at the church where Martin Luther King Jr. preached. That's his job. That's Raphael Warnock preaches from the pulpit that Martin Luther King Jr. preached from in Atlanta. And so, you know, he's got to be good at what he does. He's got to be good at speaking and holding a crowd. Well, when a new senator, you know, is elected, there comes the time when they have the opportunity to deliver their first floor speech. And, I pulled the clip, didn't I? Oh, don't tell me I closed the window. I would be really mad at myself if I did that. I think I did. Here it is. Okay. Whew. Because I had the video queued up. Now, Raphael Warnock had that experience yesterday. It was his maiden floor speech, his first floor speech in the U.S. Senate. Now, depending who you listen to, either members of the Senate do try to show up to see a colleague's maiden voyage, or they don't. I don't know. I got mixed signals there. And honestly, I've never tuned in to see a senator's first speech. And so I didn't see it when it happened yesterday. But I watched it this morning. And wow. Wow. I'm sad that it's 22 minutes long. So I can't play the whole thing for you. I will, however, post it on the blog at NicoleSandler.com. with today's show and the format, just so you know, so you can always find where I post the videos of what I play during the show on the blog page with the podcast, with the video of the program and videos that I play during the show. So the format is always NicoleSandler.com/ and then the date, and it's in the format of the month dash day dash year. So today is NicoleSandler.com/3-18-21. It's really easy. Or just go to NicoleSandler.com, and that day's show usually shows up in a box on the very front page. You can just click on it, and I try to make it easy for you. So, you know, my site is pretty intuitive, so just go check it out. I will post the entirety of Senator Raphael Warnock's 22-minute speech, because you should watch the whole thing. But since I don't have time to play the whole thing, I'm just going to play for you an excerpt. And it's, you know, not a short excerpt. I'm going to play a few minutes of it because it's really hard to cut him because he is that good. But let me just join in progress. He started off by talking about the horrific shooting that happened in Georgia, his state, the day before. And then he talked about voting rights and the For the People Act, which passed the House and is now coming to the Senate. In the House, it was H.R. 1 or H.B. 1. In the Senate, it's S.B. 1. And so he's already talked quite a bit about it. I can't paraphrase it. You're going to have to watch the whole thing, and you really need to. But let me share with you. We'll pick up. As he's talking a little bit about his background and his family and why it's so important to be able to vote.
You know, voting rights used to be a bipartisan issue.
Yeah.
The last time the voting rights bill was reauthorized was 2006. George W. Bush was president. And it passed this chamber 98-0.
98-0.
But then in 2013, the Supreme Court rejected the successful formula for supervision and preclearance contained in the 1965 Voting Rights Act. They asked Congress to fix it.
Oy.
That was nearly 8 years ago. And the American people are still waiting.
Yeah.
Stripped of protections, voters in states with a long history of voter discrimination and voters in many other states have been thrown to the winds. We Americans have noisy and spirited debates about many things, and we should. That's what it means to live in a free country.
Mm-hmm.
But access to the ballot ought to be nonpartisan.
You think?
I submit that there should be 100 votes in this chamber for policies that will make it easier for Americans to make their voices heard in our democracy. Surely, there ought to be at least 60.
You think?
In this chamber who believe, as I do, that the four most powerful words uttered in a democracy are "the people have spoken." Therefore, we must ensure that all of the people can speak. But if not, we must still pass voting rights. The right to vote is preservative of all other rights. It is not just another issue alongside other issues. It is foundational.
Hmm.
It is a reason why any of us has the privilege of standing here in the first place.
Touché.
It is about the covenant we have with one another as an American people. E pluribus unum, out of many one. It above all else must be protected. And so let's be clear. I'm not here today to spiral into the procedural argument regarding whether the filibuster in general has merits or has outlived its usefulness. I'm here to say that this issue is bigger than the filibuster. I stand before you saying that this issue, access to voting and preempting politicians' efforts to restrict voting, is so fundamental to our democracy that it is too important to be held hostage by a Senate rule, especially one historically used to restrict expansion of voting rights. It is a contradiction to say we must protect minority rights in the Senate while refusing to protect minority rights in the society. Colleagues, no Senate rule should overrule the integrity of our democracy. And we must find a way to pass voting rights whether we get rid of the filibuster or not.
You think?
And so as I close, and nobody believes a preacher when he says, as I close, let me say that I, as a man of faith, I believe that democracy is the political enactment of a spiritual idea.
Okay.
The sacred worth of all human beings. The notion that we all have within us a spark of the divine and a right to participate in the shaping of our destiny. Reinhold Niebuhr was right. Humanity's capacity for justice makes democracy possible, but humanity's inclination to injustice makes democracy necessary.
He's good.
John Lewis understood that and was beaten on a bridge defending it. Amelia Boynton, like so many women not mentioned nearly enough, was gassed on that same bridge. A white woman named Viola Luiso was killed. Mega Evers was murdered in his own driveway. Wow. Schwerner, Cheney, and Goodman, two Jews and an African-American standing up for that sacred idea of democracy, also paid the ultimate price. And we in this body would be stopped and stymied by partisan politics, short-term political gain, Senate procedure. I say let's get this done.
Yes.
No matter what. I urge my
yes.
colleagues to pass these two bills, strengthen and lengthen the cords of our democracy, secure our credibility as the premier voice for freedom-loving people and democratic movements all over the world.
Sounds good to me.
And win the future for all of our children. Mr. President, I yield the floor.
And I don't even have to play any applause here because the Senate applauded for him. You see people standing up. That just doesn't happen. I think we have a lot to look forward to with Senator Raphael Warnock in the future. I can't wait to see what he brings us. And, you know, by comparison's sake, I was going to pull a clip of former Senator Kelly Loeffler, but nah, not necessary. Not necessary at all. All right. So yesterday, I played for you that wonderful rendition of, a parody of Hallelujah, the Leonard Cohen song, of course, made popular by Jeff Buckley, called Have the New Jab, because the family who sang it, the Marsh family, they're British. And so they refer to the vaccines as jabs. You get a jab. I'm 1 week, 6 days away from my second jab. But I have to admit, I've sort of become a little bit obsessed by this Marsh family. So I told you yesterday I didn't have time to play a second tune for you. Well, today I do. And you'll see why I'm so obsessed with this family. So the father, I thought he had to be a musical family. Turns out he's a history professor. And they are in lockdown. Look, Italy is in lockdown. Parts of France are going into lockdown again. I'm here in Florida, where Governor Death Sentence says, hey, everybody come out and play. Let's all get infected. Yeah. And the Republicans are touting him as, you know, the great white hope for 2022 and 2024. Oh, please. Come on. Get your heads out of the sand or your asses or wherever they might be. Don't do that. So Karate Joe says, I think those kids are coerced. I don't think so. So I'm going to play for you another of their songs just because I'm obsessed with them. I really am. Because we're all looking forward to the day when the pandemic rules lighten up. Not before they're supposed to, though. This is the Marsh Family with Goodbye Pandemic Road. All right, take it away, family. Here we go. Ooh. Yeah.
Bye.
the Marsh family. How awesome are they, right? They're so cute. All right. Well, this is a more familiar face. You should recognize the face and the voice.
It's not too late, baby. It's not too late. And you really are gonna make it. You're gonna be so strong.
Yes, that was Carole King.
Right now, the COVID-19 vaccines are available to millions of Americans, and soon they will be available to everyone.
This vaccine means hope. It will protect you and those you love from this dangerous and deadly disease.
I want to go back to work, and I want to be able to move around.
To visit with Michelle's mom, to hug her and see her on her birthday.
You know what I'm really looking forward to is going to opening day in Texas Ranger Stadium with a full stadium.
Vaccines can help put an end to the pandemic.
We've suffered enough damage.
In order to get rid of this pandemic, it's important for our fellow citizens to get vaccinated.
I'm getting vaccinated because we want this pandemic to end as soon as possible.
Jimmy.
So we urge you to get vaccinated when it's available to you.
So roll up your sleeve and do your part.
This is our shot.
Now it's up to you.
It's up to you. So that video right there was, I guess it was shot the day of the inauguration, because we saw during the inauguration the living former presidents, aside from the former guy, all together, right, and doing a little spot. And then they got together to advocate for getting the vaccine. And of course, all the living former presidents participated in that ad, except for the former orange guy. That's okay, because I don't think anyone wanted him there anyway. Diane Russell just said, man, Bush is looking old. Jimmy Carter's looking old. Bill Clinton's looking old. The only one who's not looking old is Obama. And comparatively speaking, he is. And Carole King, how awesome was that? She did her own parody of her own song, It's Too Late, with Vaccinate. Everybody's getting in on the act, as it should be. All right. There was other stuff that happened today, too. I don't have time to play it before Howie comes along. But Rand Paul, what a jerk. You know, I mentioned it to yesterday when we had a caller call from Kentucky that Charles Booker, who should have run against Mitch McConnell, I saw on Twitter yesterday floating the idea of running against Rand Paul. Please, 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 please. I think, obviously, Charles Booker would have stood a better chance than Amy McGrath of beating Mitch McConnell. I think he stands a very good chance of beating Rand Paul. Let me just play for you a few seconds of the back and forth. Did I put it up? Maybe I didn't pull it here. Yeah, never mind. I thought I pulled the Rand Paul thing. I guess I don't have it handy. You know what? I bet I have it. Bet I have it in this pile. He's just such an idiot. Here, let me just share with you a little bit. Rand Paul and Dr. Fauci going at it.
Significant reinfection. What study shows significant reinfection, hospitalization, and death after either natural infection or the vaccine? It doesn't exist. There is no evidence that there are significant reinfections after vaccine. In fact, I don't think we have a hospitalization in the United States after the 2-week period after the second vaccination.
Yeah,
you have a death in the United States.
Let Fauci speak.
You're not hearing what I'm saying about variants. We're talking about wild type versus variants.
And what proof is there that there are significant reinfections with hospitalizations and death from the variants? None in our
country. Let him answer the question.
Well, because we don't have a prevalent of a variant yet. We're having one. Can I finish?
Please.
We're having 117 that's becoming more dominant.
You're making policy based on conjecture.
Oh, my God.
You have the
it isn't based on conjecture.
Get variants, so you want people to wear a mask for another couple years.
No.
You've been vaccinated, and you parade around in two masks for show.
No,
you can't get it again. There's virtually 0% chance you're going to get
bullshit.
And you're telling people that have had the vaccine, who have immunity. You're defying everything we know about immunity by telling people to wear a mask to have been vaccinated.
No.
Instead, you should be saying there is no science to say we're going to have a problem from the large number of people being vaccinated. You want to get rid of vaccine hesitancy?
This guy doesn't shut up.
Wear a mask after they get the vaccine. You want people to get the vaccine? Give them a reward.
He doesn't let Fauci speak.
The nanny state's going to be there.
Oh,
three
my
more
God.
Years and you got to wear a mask forever. People don't want to hear it. There's no science behind it.
Well, let me just state for the record that masks are not theater.
Thank
masks
you.
Are protective. And we
have immunity there, theater. If
oh,
you already
God.
Have immunity, you're wearing a mask to give comfort to others. You're not wearing a mask because of any science.
I totally disagree with you.
Unbelievable. What a disrespectful piece of shit. Hey, Rand Paul, I got a song for
you. I just need you to shut the fuck up, cause nobody asked you, bitch. I need you to shut the fuck up, bitch. Shut the fuck up, bitch. Just shut the fuck up, bitch. Shut the fuck up, bitch. Bow, bow, shut the fuck up. Shut the fuck up. Bow, bow, shut the fuck up. Shut the fuck up. Bow, bow, shut the fuck up. Shut the fuck up. Bow, bow.
Oh, song's over. Time now to get Howie Klein on the line. You think?
Are you a multinational corporation hungry for a treat? Well, come on down to Schmucky Chucky's, where you'll personally be seated by Chuck Schumer himself.
So many dishes, and they're all fresh.
You're gonna love our Blue Dog special, the Dino Burger, because we say so.
A good hamburger and french fries.
And every burger comes with a side order of
grits. I love grits. I love anything with corn. It's corn.
All for only $50,000. Watch it all down with a Dirty Debbie.
9/10 water, 1/10 orange juice. After a week or two, you drink this, it's 200 calories and it's acetic.
And wipe your mouth with a tissue print of Glass-Steagall. For dessert, try our DNC tarts.
Little cookies, tell the quality of that.
Most restaurants give you a mint, but at Schmucky Chucky's, you get complimentary.
Sweet and low.
Who picks up the tab for all this? Find out now with Howie Klein of DownWithTyranny.com on the Nicole Sandler Show.
Hello, Howie Klein.
Hello, Nicole Sandler. How are you?
I'm doing okay. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. It's like 15 minutes ago, I got a call from someone running for Senate, a guy named Lucas Kuntz. And he's really, really good. The guy is amazing. It's the first time I spoke to him, but he was incredible. So I asked him if he wants to, you know, just come with me right on the show. And he said, yeah, let's do it. And then I couldn't figure out how to, you know, do a three-way call. So I said, oh, we'll do it next week.
Oh, okay. Or you could have just sent me his info and I could call him and we could do it. But
Right. That would be the normal thing to do.
Right.
But I was in the kitchen making matzo ball soup.
Ooh.
And, you know, he had just called out of the blue. So, and it was like, you know, coming up to the time. It just wouldn't have been easy and seamless.
Gotcha.
So I figured we'll do it next week.
In what state is he running for Senate?
He's running for the open seat in Missouri.
Oh.
And so that's the one that Blunt is leaving.
Right.
So this guy is an incredible populist. He's like, I think he said he was 38 or 39. And he's got it figured out. He's just so good. He's the kind of guy that can win in a state like that. The Democrats never, ever nominate people like him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they nominate these, like, really awful centrists.
Right.
And, you know, who don't mean anything and don't stand for anything. And people, you know, there's no reason for anyone to come out and vote for them. You know, if you're a Democrat and you vote for someone who has got a D next to your name, you'll vote for him. Otherwise, you won't. You don't win that way. So this guy is different.
Okay, cool. So he'll join us next week.
I'm excited about it.
Great. All right. I look forward to that next week. Also, I was just telling the listeners a little while ago, I saw a tweet from Charles Booker yesterday or the day before, saying that he's really looking seriously at challenging Rand Paul. Please.
Yes, he's going to.
Oh, cool. Oh, that'd be great. Because he stands a chance where Amy McGrath really didn't. Because he's good.
Right.
Right. He's got something to run on. So there's that.
It's just like this guy, Lucas Kuntz, same kind of thing. Same kind of ideas of, you know, really trying to do something for actual people, not just being like a professional Democrat doing something for donors and Chuck Schumer.
Yeah, right. And you know, Rand Paul, I just played a tiny clip of him just being a total dick to Dr. Fauci. He is allegedly an ophthalmologist, but he's not a board-certified ophthalmologist. Who would go to a doctor that is not board-certified in their field? Would you?
Not just that, but he's been sued for damaging people's eyes.
I mean, wow.
This is like, he's got a long history. I mean, I'm sure he doesn't practice anymore, but before he was actually elected, I think he had like three or four lawsuits from people who he didn't tell he wasn't board certified.
Oh my God.
And damaged their eyes, and then they went after him legally. I don't know how they turned out, but I remember writing about it years and years ago.
Wow. Wow. So one other thing before we get into the subject that we said we're going to talk about. Yesterday, and I'm sure you know this, but Pramila Jayapal and Debbie Dingell spearheaded the launch of the introduction of the Medicare for All Act of 2021. And my Congressman Ted Deutsch finally got with the program.
Which is interesting because a lot of people didn't get with the program.
Really?
Who maybe in previous years had said that they were backing it. So that list of 109 Democrats who have signed on as co-sponsors,
uh-huh,
including Ted Deutsch, it's divided in two. On the one hand, you've got people like, obviously, like Pramila, who are all in and are going to fight for it and do everything they can to win over people and really, you know, really go for it. Some of the others, it's just, and I think Ted Deutsch might be one of these, he just wants his name on it so that he doesn't get a challenge from the left, so that it's there, he's not going to do anything. You know, if it happens to wind up, being called, which probably won't, he'll vote yes.
Mm-hmm.
But so there's two different kinds of co-sponsors to a bill like this. You know, there are a lot of people whose names you'll recognize who you know are going to fight for this. You know, like a person like AOC, for example.
Sure.
That they're all about this kind of thing. And then there are others like, you know, who are less, less about this.
Right.
You know, Pelosi promised last time that she was going to bring this up for a vote, and she never did.
Right. No, I hear you. And I still...
Biden doesn't want it being brought up for a vote either.
No, of course not. But I'll tell you, I do give him credit because you've heard me talk about my friend Mitchell Stolberg, who died. He was Broward County's biggest Medicare for All advocate. And in his message in this live stream yesterday, Congressman Deutsch actually name checked him and said, you know, I got to mention the late Mitchell Stolberg, who was at every town hall meeting, always with his Medicare for All sign, always advocating for it. And I'm just sorry he's not here to see this day. So, I mean,
oh, that's great.
It was great. It was really, really wonderful.
Which wrong. Maybe he's going to be on. Maybe he'll be one of the ones who really does push this thing.
Maybe. I have a call into his office, so hopefully get him back on the show. And I'll put him on the spot because I can. Because I do. So
we'll do it in a friendly way. Give him an opportunity to say how much he's going to work to get this thing passed.
Oh, without a doubt. Now, I've known him for years, and I like him. He's, you know, my criticism of him is that he's not progressive enough, but maybe he's slowly coming around. You know.
Yeah.
So
I mean, this is about as progressive as you can be. I mean, Biden is not going to. Biden will basically just tell Pelosi to bury this thing.
Right.
But he's already come up with his own thing that is basically there to protect the insurance companies who are going to fight like hell to keep it from happening. So he wants to have a public option on Obamacare.
You know, it's not a bad thing,
right?
But it's certainly not as good as Medicare for All. The thing that gets me pissed off is that the kind of political capital that you're going to have to expend to even get a public option, political capital with industry, political capital with the Democrats, political capital with Republicans. It's the same exact amount that you'd have to spend to get Medicare for All. So why put, you know, 100 kilowatts of energy into getting something that's not as good,
right,
when you put the same 100 kilowatts and get something that's really amazing?
Yeah,
but, you know,
I'm with you.
What do I know?
I hear you. I'm with you. But you know what? I have to ask you, though, Howie. So far, you've got to admit that Biden has been surprisingly on the progressive side of things, considering where he could be. Look at the Obama administration and what he did in his first 50 some odd days, and what the Biden administration has done. Are you so far pleasantly surprised?
Slightly.
Okay.
There's some good stuff that he's done. Absolutely.
Yes.
But you know, I should be happy with the half full glass.
Yeah.
But I can't stop thinking about the part of the glass that's not full. Why didn't he put a little bit of energy into fighting for something as important as a $15 minimum wage? Because he doesn't believe in it. That's why he didn't do it.
But to hear, I saw some, I forget where I read. I read too much stuff, and I should take notes of where I read each thing. But apparently, a number of progressives had a conversation with Ron Klain. AOC, Pramila Jayapal, was up at the White House meeting with the White House Chief of Staff, the chair of the Congressional Progressive Caucus, and they have more meetings set up where there's actually a dialogue between the two. That in and of itself is a big deal, but apparently she's getting promises from him that they are going to fight for $15 an hour. So, you know, I don't want to be a naysayer. I want to give them, it's only 50 some odd days so far. I want to give them a chance to get this stuff done.
Well, it would be nice, but let's be real.
Okay.
$15 an hour minimum wage, pass the House, no problem.
Right.
$15 minimum wage, there's only one way that's going to pass the Senate.
If you get rid of the filibuster.
So you have to avoid the filibuster. And there are two ways to do that. One is through the reconciliation bill, which Biden just killed. And the other would be through getting rid of the filibuster completely, which Biden will also is against. So when they say they're going to fight for it, they're doing? They're lying. They're lying. Maybe they're going to make believe they're fighting for it, but that's not the same as fighting for it. I mean, if you really want this to happen, either you put it in the second reconciliation bill, which they won't do, and there's only going to be two, or you get rid of that filibuster. And Biden's opposed to it. Biden is saying, well, let's have a talking filibuster.
Okay.
You know what? That's worse than the filibuster they have now.
Yeah, well, there's a way to make the talking filibuster really work well. I had Norm Ornstein on the show last week, and his idea is really good. You should hear that. I'll send you that interview because it was spot on. He's got it right. Where, yes, you make them talk. You make them work for it. You make them feel some pain. But what he wants is the minority party, the one who's doing the filibustering, who has to hold the floor, must come up with 41 votes to keep the filibuster going, as opposed to making the majority party, in this case the Democrats, come up with 60 votes to kill the filibuster, to put the onus on them. And apparently it's a very tightrope they're walking. Joe Manchin seems to be the sticking point here. Is he up in 22? Not that we
know. No.
And can we pick up another seat held by a Republican in the Senate so that Joe Manchin's vote is not as necessary?
Well, first of all, Joe Manchin is only the second worst member of the Senate, Democrat member of the Senate.
Are you saying Kyrsten Sinema's worse?
She's definitely worse than he is.
Wow.
So we're already talking about two.
Yeah.
But then there are others.
Yeah.
There, you know,
Feinstein.
Those two go out in front and they say, you know, where are your targets? Go ahead. But hiding behind them are people like the two from New Hampshire. The two from
Delaware.
Yeah. The two from Virginia. I mean, we got some pretty conservative senators who also don't want to change it. Right. Feinstein, what about her?
Feinstein, oh my God. Well, now there's, you know, there's talk. People are trying to get her to retire. Her and Justice Breyer. They're saying, go now. And I don't think either one of them are budging.
Well, there's a couple of things. With Breyer, I think he wants to stay until the last minute.
Oh, come on.
No
look
real
what
reason
you
for
know,
him
and I'm sorry.
Right.
As much as I adored Ruth Bader Ginsburg, sorry, her doing that is now is responsible for us having a 6-3 court.
Right, but as long as Breyer does it before the midterms, it's fine.
Okay, so he's got a year.
In other words, if he does it tomorrow or he does it like in 3 months, it doesn't make any difference.
Okay, but he's got to do it in
3 months.
As long
as he does it before the midterms, and
okay.
I think he intends to do that.
Okay, I hope so.
And in terms of Feinstein, apparently they're offering her husband, who should really be in prison, he's a criminal, but they're offering him a big ambassadorship.
Right.
Like if he takes her away, like, you know, Germany or
right.
France or England, like one of the real biggies that people really want to go to, not like
right.
Luxembourg.
Right.
So, and then presumably she would retire. Then the question is, who will Newsom appoint?
And he says he would appoint an African American woman.
Today, yeah, well, he said he's, you know, when talk is cheap,
yeah.
And he said he's going to appoint an African American woman. Now, Gavin Newsom only cares about one thing right now, which is not getting recalled.
Right.
Enough ballots were turned in either yesterday or today to put that on the ballot. So now it's for sure he's going to be on the ballot as a recall. He's really hated. And people think, well, it'll be safe because, you know, either you vote against the recall or you're going to wind up with a Republican. But they're on two different pages. So and people aren't that smart. Page one, do you want to recall him or not? Everyone in the state hates him. They're going to vote yes, we want to recall him.
Right.
Page two, who do you want to replace him with?
Yeah.
So but they're going to already say they want to recall him. Then they're going to be faced with, on another page that they have to turn, they're going to be faced with the prospect of what?
I don't know. And that's how you got Arnold Schwarzenegger last time.
He's no ball of cherries either.
Right. And that's how you got Arnold last time. So, you know, be careful what you wish for, California.
Yep. Well, that's a problem. But the thing is that Newsom said, you know, he didn't say, I am going to appoint Barbara Lee.
Right.
He said, or I'm going to appoint Karen Bass. He just said,
A black woman. Right.
You know, and he's pandering before his recall, but he's pandering to 6%. The African Americans are 6% of the population of California. Six.
Wow.
Much bigger. The biggest demographic in California, Hispanics. Mm. And he just appointed a Hispanic man to the U.S. Senate.
That's right.
Maybe the next will be a Hispanic woman. The second biggest demographic is white people. The third biggest is Asian Americans. And then after that comes blacks.
Mm.
There has never been I shouldn't say that there's never been. When I was a kid, we had this guy, Hayek Howard. Do you remember him at all?
No. Mm-mm.
He was a one-term psychopathic, so far right. He was further right than Barry Goldwater.
Oh,
and I don't know if Reagan appointed him. I don't remember how he got in there, but he was in there for a short time and completely out of his mind. So I was going to say we've never had an Asian American senator, but we did. We did,
yeah.
And it was an unfortunate experience. But, you know, I mean, look, if he wants to appoint Karen Bass or he wants to appoint Barbara Lee, that would be amazing. I'd like be so happy.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
That's not who he is.
Right.
That's
right.
Who Gavin Newsom is. He's a neoliberal.
Yeah.
I don't see him putting someone like that in, and he's going to do what Schumer and Biden tell him to do anyway. And I don't think that either of them are going down that trail.
Okay. Well.
So anyway,
let's find out.
I don't know what got me off on talking about a California Senate, maybe. Oh yeah, Feinstein getting appointed.
Feinstein's
husband getting appointed to an ambassadorship, so that she goes off and doesn't be a senator anymore.
Oh my God, she's just too much.
I mean, they did talk her into resigning as the chair of the Judiciary Committee.
Apparently,
her out of that.
She forgot. She agreed to Chuck Schumer that she would step down and then forgot that she agreed to it. So if the stories are true, so go figure. All right, Howie, before we run out of time, I do want to bring up a story that you've got posted at downwithtyranny.com. The headline reads, regardless of party, do you trust members of Congress enough to let them have earmarks again? Now, a lot of people have forgotten about earmarks. How could you forget the pork? But so now how is it coming back? The Republicans did away with it, and now they're bringing it back because they don't want Joe Biden deciding how your money gets spent?
Well, no.
That's what they say.
This is the Democrats who are doing the bad guys here. So it's Denny Hoyer, who's, you know, really known as the congressman from K Street.
Yes.
And so it's K Street that wants this back, that desperately wants it back because their revenues are down. And because their revenues are down, they're not giving as much to members of Congress. It's Denny Hoyer and what's his name? McCarthy, Kevin McCarthy. Those are the two big recipients of lobbyist money. And the lobbyists are saying, bring back those earmarks. So Hoyer has been pushing it. Now, Hoyer loves earmarks. So he's pushing and pushing and pushing. They've presented a case that's a really pretty good case. But the thing is, it's phony. It's a foot in the door. The reality of earmarks is the history of earmarks, and that is, no matter how idealistic they want to, you know, make it sound, 2 years, 3 years down the lane, they are going to be stealing just like they were doing before. If anyone wants to see what earmarks are really about, if they go to that blog post at Down with Tyranny, they will find a video. And the video was a special from Fox News, hosted by Chris Wallace. They were looking for the most corrupt members of Congress, and they found several. But the one that I used was Ken Calvert here in Southern California, Riverside County, and they picked. Fox News picked him as an example of the most corrupt member of Congress. And what's it about? Earmarks. What did he do? He buys a piece of desert that's worth nothing and earmarked a highway to go right to his property. And suddenly his property is, you know, worth 10 times the money, and he sells it.
Right.
That's what an earmark is in the hands of corruption. If the earmark was all going to be done by Ted Lieu and AOC, God bless, let's have millions of earmarks.
Yeah.
But that's not the way it's going to be. It's going to be the Ken Calverts of the world who are going to be doing this kind of stuff.
Right. So, Howie, so it's a question of a congressman has a pet project at home that they want in a bill, and in return for the vote, they get their project in. The question is between the good members of Congress and the evil ones. The good ones are going to bring in projects that their district sorely needs. The evil ones are going to do things that are going to line their own purses.
Yes. And the history shows us that no matter how idealistic these people make it sound, and they are making a very, very good case. I have not talked to a single Democrat, progressive Democrat, who's opposed to this. They all like it. Every one of them thinks they're thinking about what good they can do. That's what they're thinking about.
Mm-hmm.
And then yesterday, the Republican conference got together, and all the ones like Ken Calvert, all the crooks, they were all gung-ho to do it. Now, you know, that the Democrats are like all there. They all want to do it.
Right.
The Republicans are divided. You know, the ones who know, and usually those are the very right-wing ones, the very, very right-wing ones know how corrupt this thing is. They don't want it, and they voted against it. 80-something of them voted no.
Wow.
And only, you know, the only about 20-some-odd more voted yes. So it was a little bit split in the Republicans. But the ones who voted for it are generally the ones who know, not this year, they're not going to do it right away, and probably not next year. The year after that, that's when they're going to be doing those
Denny Hoyer,
Ken Calvert kinds of tricks.
Gotcha.
We have years and years and years of that. Calvert was just one example. There's like hundreds and hundreds of them. What did everybody forget? Who what was his first name?
Abramson. Jack Abramoff. Jack Abramoff.
Thank you. Everyone forget him when he went to jail? I mean, that was about earmarks.
That's right. Sure. Yeah. That's what it's about.
He brought down the career of several Republican congressmen and senators who were doing this stuff for him.
Right.
It's all about lobbyists and bribes, and that, you know, it's a shame because otherwise earmarks could be a very good thing. There's no question about it.
Right.
I mean, like I said, you know, Ted Lieu doing earmarks, God bless. Jamie Raskin doing earmarks,
yep.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, that's
right.
What we want. But, you know, it doesn't work that way.
Right.
We're going to wind up with these crooks like Kevin McCarthy and Devin Nunes. Think of the Republicans in Florida. Think of what they have to do
God.
With these
Matt
kinds of things.
Matt Gaetz. Can you imagine Matt Gaetz? Oh, my God. right? That's
yeah.
What you got to think about. It's frightening. It's a frightening prospect. But I'll tell you another frightening prospect. I'm seeing in the national media them touting Governor Moron death sentence as a potential 2024 presidential a prospect if Donald doesn't run again. Are you kidding me? This guy is single-handedly turning Florida into a petri dish. Come on down. Yeah, have you seen the pictures of South Beach and spring break? It's sickening.
Yeah. We have some on my blog. I don't know if they're up now or they're going up tonight, but we have pictures. I think they're up now. Pictures from Daytona Beach of people partying in a crowded bar where people are like shoulder to shoulder.
Yep.
No masks. I didn't see a single mask.
Yeah.
A friend of mine told me that relatives came up, her best friend's relatives came up from Florida and gave the entire family of, you know, I don't know, almost a dozen people COVID.
Oh, God.
But all they talk about is how he's the greatest governor in the world because business is booming.
Yeah, great. Yeah, and now it's, you know, Trumpers are moving down here. So, as you know, it was purple for a while, then it turned red. Now it's going to be bright red because all the crazies are coming down here. Might
are
be time
really?
To plot an
is
escape.
That, is that a fact? I
yes.
Mean, there are a lot of Republicans
yes.
moving to Florida?
Yes. And not only that, the housing market is
why,
on fire.
Trump lives there now.
Who, what?
Trump lives there now.
I know. Yeah. I know. His whole family does. And real estate.
Which are the lucky states that are losing Trumpers?
I don't know, but they're coming here. And they're trying to turn Miami-Dade into the new Silicon Valley. So prices are way up. And apparently it's a seller's market right now. You can't buy. There's bidding wars for property. It's crazy.
It's amazing. Because, I mean, when you think about places you want to buy, you have to think just like, you know, within 10 years, Miami is going to be underwater.
Yes. Well, and it blows my mind when you see, you know, like new construction on the east side of town, that they're still building high rises on the beach. It makes no sense to me at all. But, you know, it's Florida. I don't get anything about it. But yeah. And then the fact that, you know, Ron DeSantis is as miserable a person as Donald Trump. I mean, he's like a mini-me. He goes around berating journalists and people who ask him questions that he doesn't like. You know, he just follows Trump's playbook he learned from the master, and he's getting rewarded for it as he's throwing the everyone in Florida to the COVID gods. I don't know. Just I have one more week until I get my second shot. And then 14 days to wait, and then I'll feel a lot safer.
And you'll be partying in the bar in Daytona Beach?
No, I will not. I still won't do that. Oh, my God, I'm surrounded by crazies. Howie Klein, how are things there? I keep hearing from friends in California that they're getting vaccinated. I know you still have to wait.
Yeah, everyone's getting vaccinated. Roland has his first shot. I think he's getting his second shot like this week.
Cool.
And cases are going down. Things are good. Everything's going in the right direction. You still never see anyone without a mask. Everyone is masking
really?
Or double masking.
All right. I guess I need to come back to California because they don't here in Florida.
I know.
Welcome to my world.
is shocking to me. It's shocking.
Me too. That's why I don't leave the house. So I'm, you know, we're out of time, but I'm Nicole Sandler, sequestered in my home, staying safe from the COVID. And I'm glad you're doing the same in California, Howie. As always, thank you. I'll see you next week.
See you next week.
Okay, bye. Tomorrow, David Dayan's going to be here from the American Prospect. I'll see you then. Thanks, everybody. Bye. Ah, let me leave you with today's What's News.
I read the news today, oh boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Outrage intensified on Wednesday as more details emerged about the shooting spree that left 8 people dead at 3 Atlanta area Asian spas. 7 of the victims were women. 6 were of Asian descent. The suspect, a white man who was captured Tuesday night after a police chase, said he was addicted to sex and targeted the women at the spas to eliminate temptation. He was charged with murder, but experts agreed that prosecutors also could charge him with hate crimes. There was a lot of action in the House of Representatives on Wednesday. They voted to award congressional gold medals to members of the Capitol Police for their heroism on January 6th. The vote was 413 to 12. 12? Yeah. A number of Republicans took offense at some of the language in the bill, which referred to the Capitol as, quote, the temple of our American democracy, and called the rioters, quote, a mob of insurrectionists. It is, and they were. Among the 12 were the usual suspects, Biggs, Gates, Marjorie Taylor Greene, and Louis Gohmert. The House on Wednesday also voted to reauthorize the Violence Against Women Act, which expired in 2019 after the Republican-led Senate just didn't take up the measure. That vote was 244 to 172. A whopping 29 Republicans joined the Democrats to reauthorize the Violence Against Women Act. Amazing. President Biden introduced the original Violence Against Women Act in 1990, and a version of it was enacted in 94. It was reauthorized 3 times, most recently in 2013, with support from 23 Senate Republicans and 87 House Republicans. The House also voted 222 to 204 to revoke a lapsed deadline for ratifying the Equal Rights Amendment. The ERA had been approved by only 35 states, not the necessary 38, when a deadline set by Congress expired in 1982. But Virginia became the 38th state to ratify it back in January of last year. So if the Senate approves the House measure and Biden signs it, the courts will likely ultimately decide if that'll work or if ERA supporters have to start over again. Well, the new director of national intelligence, Avril Haines, on Wednesday released an unclassified summary of a joint assessment from her office, Department of Homeland Security, and the Department of Justice of foreign threats to the 2020 U.S. federal elections. The full report had been released to the former administration and to congressional leadership on January 7th. Among the findings, well, that Russian President Vladimir Putin authorized operations which, quote, a range of Russian government organizations conducted that were aimed at denigrating Biden's candidacy and the Democratic Party, supporting Trump, undermining public confidence in the electoral process, and exacerbating sociopolitical divisions in the United States. The report said that Russia did not meddle in election infrastructure, but instead focused on pushing narratives, including lies about Biden and his son Hunter, suggesting that they had engaged in corrupt behavior in Ukraine, pushing that information or disinformation to U.S. media organizations, U.S. officials, and prominent individuals, including some close to former President Trump and his administration. The report also says, quote, even after the election, Russian online influence continued to promote narratives questioning the election results and disparaging President Biden and the Democratic Party. These efforts parallel plans Moscow had in place in 2016 to discredit a potential incoming Clinton administration, but which it scrapped after Trump's victory. This is stunning. You remember that Trump's associate, Roger Stone, insisted that Trump was being cheated back in the 2016 primaries and then launched a Stop the Steal website before the 2016 election. Of course, when Trump was declared the winner, that was closed up and scrapped and just put on hold until 2020. So typical. The intelligence community also warned that the, quote, narratives of fraud in the election and the emboldening impact of the January 6th attack by Trump supporters will likely trigger violence by domestic terrorists again this year. The report says that the most lethal threats from domestic terrorists come from, quote, racially or ethnically motivated violent extremists and militia extremists. Well, Moscow reacted to the report, which directly accused Putin of ordering efforts to interfere in our election by recalling its ambassador, Anatoly Antonov. Some news out of Minneapolis. The judge in former police officer Derek Chauvin's trial for the death of George Floyd dismissed two jurors on Wednesday after questioning them about reports that the city had reached a $27 million settlement with Floyd's family. One of the jurors reportedly told the judge that the settlement would make it difficult for him to be impartial in the case and confirmed, quote, my opinion that I already had. Another said, quote, the sticker price obviously shocked me and swayed me a little bit and suggested that the city of Minneapolis felt that something was wrong and they wanted to make it right. Seven jurors remained seated in the trial. Chauvin, who pressed his knee on Floyd's neck for nearly 9 minutes before he died, is on trial facing murder and manslaughter charges. The IRS plans to delay this year's tax filing deadline about a month from April 15th to May 17th. So we've got that going for us. And finally, Senator Raphael Warnock, who won a January special election to become Georgia's first black senator and whose victory tipped the control of the Senate to the Democrats, delivered his maiden speech on Wednesday, and it was a good one. He spoke on the very same day that Democrats introduced SB 1, the For the People Act, a sweeping overhaul of election law. And he used his speech to stress that new voting restrictions Republicans are pushing in several states amount to an attack against democracy itself.
Surely, there ought to be at least 60 in this chamber who believe, as I do, that the four most powerful words uttered in a democracy are "the people have spoken." Therefore, we must ensure that all of the people can speak. But if not, we must still pass voting rights. The right to vote is preservative of all other rights. It is not just another issue alongside other issues. It is foundational. It is the reason why any of us has the privilege of standing here in the first place. It is about the covenant we have with one another as an American people. E pluribus unum, out of many one. It above all else must be protected. And so as I close, and nobody believes a preacher when he says as I close, let me say that I, as a man of faith, I believe that democracy is the political enactment of a spiritual idea, the sacred worth of all human beings, the notion that we all have within us a spark of the divine and a right to participate in the shaping of our destiny. John Lewis understood that and was beaten on a bridge defending it. Amelia Boynton, like so many women not mentioned nearly enough, was gassed on that same bridge. A white woman named Viola Luiso was killed. Mega Evers was murdered in his own driveway. Schwerner, Cheney, and Goodman, two Jews and an African-American standing up for that sacred idea of democracy, also paid the ultimate price. And we in this body would be stopped and stymied by partisan politics, short-term political gain, Senate procedure. I say let's get this done no matter what. I urge my colleagues to pass these two bills, strengthen and lengthen the cords of our democracy, secure our credibility as the premier voice for freedom-loving people and democratic movements all over the world, and win the future for all of our children. Mr. President, I yield the floor.
You need to watch the whole thing. Senator Warnock was nothing short of brilliant. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is 100% listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.